Now, making new friends can be really hard, especially as a grown-up. And keeping up those existing friendships as life changes can be a big challenge, too. Our next guest says the science of attachment can teach us a lot about our own strengths and weaknesses as friends and what we look for in friendships. And she's got advice to make it easier to find new friends and to be a good friend to the ones you've got. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a friendship in your life that's really been important to you? What works for maintaining close friendships in your own life? Have you found ways to make new friends, or is it a challenge for you like it is for a lot of people? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Marissa G. Franco is an assistant clinical professor of university honors at the University of Maryland. She's the author of the new book, Platonic: How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends. Marissa, thanks a lot for joining us.
Me.
Now, you open the book with a personal moment for you. A romantic relationship ended. And tell us how important your friends were in rising up from that moment.
Yeah, so to heal from that at the time, I decided to start this wellness group with my friends where we would meditate, cook, do yoga together, and I just really felt the love from all of them, and it led me to question some ideas that I had about love, that romantic love was the only love that counted, the only love that made me worthy, that, you know, proved my value. And so I started to wonder, why doesn't platonic love matter? Like, why hasn't it mattered to me that I'm loved by all of these people? Why have I treated it like this is secondary and illegitimate and romantic love is the only legitimate form of connection? So I sort of went on a quest to level this hierarchy of love that I think hurts people who are within and outside of romantic relationships because it makes us really devalue friendship. And so that's part of the reason that I decided to write Platonic.
I think we all might know, yeah, having friends, that's a good thing. Nothing wrong with that. You really lay out how important friends can be and having those connections. What are some of the benefits of having good friendships?
Yeah. So loneliness is as toxic for our bodies as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And you might think, okay, but I can cure my loneliness through my spouse or my family, right? But there's actually three types of loneliness, only one in which can be met through a spouse, which is intimate loneliness, the desire for someone to have a very close connection with, like you have with a spouse or a best friend. But there's also relational loneliness. We have a desire for people that are about as close to us as a friend. And then collective loneliness, which is the desire for being part of a group that's working towards a common goal. And any of these forms of loneliness can be at play, such that even if we're very happy with our spouse, we can still end up feeling lonely because basically this suggests that we've always needed an entire community to feel truly whole.
And you share some of the numbers there. We Americans are kind of bad at this. Our numbers of friends, our friend networks are going down from year to year. What do you think is driving that?
Oh, man, so many different factors. You know, it really started with the creation of the television in the 1950s. And before then, leisure was a public affair that people did with their friends when they had free time. They just spent it with other people. But then people just started to spend their free time in front of the television. And in 2012, we also see spikes in loneliness. And that's around the time when the smartphone really became popular. And of course, there's ways to use technology to foster connection. But what it does is it has opportunity costs, right? That if we're using this technology every day for entertainment, to pass the time, we're not hanging out, which is what we would do if we were maybe more bored and didn't have this low-hanging fruit that gives us almost a snack of connection, parasocial connections. We feel connected to people we don't even know. And the snack makes us not realize just how hungry we are for the full meal of connection, the in-person interaction.
We're talking to Marissa G. Franco about her new book. It's called Platonic: How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has friendship been an important thing in your life? Do you have a friend you want to talk about with us? Or has it been a challenge for you, maybe as you age? Spend more time with your family. Is it harder to make and keep friendships? Or have you moved someplace new? What worked? What didn't work with making new friends? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Marissa, let's get to work. In that situation, somebody's thinking, yeah, gosh, I want more friends, but you don't want to just walk up to another grown-up and say, will you be my friend? How do we get started?
Yeah, the first thing is we have to let go of the idea that friendship happens organically. Mm-hmm. As adults, it does not. As kids, we have these ingredients, continuous unplanned interaction and shared vulnerability. We see people every day. We let our guard down through gym, recess, right? And that's what fosters organic connection. As adults, we no longer are inhabiting settings like that, right? At work, we see people every day, but we usually are not particularly vulnerable with our colleagues. So that means that you can't rely on friendship happening organically. In fact, doing so is related to being more lonely over time. And you're going to have to initiate. Now, people are very afraid of initiating, but I like to share with people, the research actually finds people are less likely to reject you than you think. There's research on a phenomenon called the liking gap, wherein when strangers interact and are asked to predict, how much do you think the other person likes you? We tend to underestimate just how liked we are. The more self-critical we are, the more pronounced this underestimation. So I suggest assume people like you, because according to other research on something called the acceptance prophecy, when people are told that they'll go into a group and be liked based on their personality profile, and even if this is a lie, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because it makes people warmer, friendlier, more engaged.
On a practical level, so we know somebody at work or a friend of a friend or whatever, what are some ways to build that relationship in a friendshiply direction?
Yeah, so right, I talked about the problem at work being that we only show one dimension of us. A great way to bring out multiple dimensions of us is something called repotting, which was created by Ryan Hubbard at the Kite String Project. And that's the idea of varying the settings in which we interact, right? So stop interacting at work, stop talking about work, like share who you are as a real person, say to them like, oh, it's been so nice to like get to know you at work. Like, would you want to go for a walk after work? Or, you know, I was going to go to the museum this weekend. Would you be up for that? Right. And that also makes the friendship more sustainable. People complain, well, when the work is over, we no longer see each other. But once you have precedent for seeing each other, even when you're not in the working hours, it's going to be easier to maintain it if there's transitions as well.
Now, you write about the psychology of our attachment styles. What is an attachment style and how does it affect our friendship journeys?
Yeah, great question. So attachment style is basically a template we have for how people will treat us that we create in childhood and update throughout life. And this template we have, this expectation for how other people will treat us, is ridden with confirmation bias, such that we see in the world things that match our expectation and discount experiences that don't match it. So there's three major attachment styles. Secure people, their template is people are trustworthy. They'll love me, they'll accept me. And that means they behave in ways that reflect this template. They are open, vulnerable, better at initiating friendships, less likely to end friendships, according to the research. They move away from people that aren't nice and aren't friendly. They're just very comfortable with themselves. They assume people like them, right? Versus anxiously attached people whose template is people are going to abandon you. So how do they navigate friendships because of that? They move very quickly, are sort of like overshare from the beginning, tend to have these very fragile friendships. They assume they're being rejected even when they're not. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because then they try to reject because they think they're rejected. And they sort of manifest their greatest fears because of that. And then you have avoidantly attached people who are also afraid of abandonment and fundamentally think others are untrustworthy. So how do they handle these fears? The avoidantly attached people, they keep to themselves. They're the lone wolves. They're never vulnerable. They're not really trying in their friendships. They end up ghosting more than other attachment styles. People feel like I'm around him, but I don't actually know him because he never actually shares anything about himself. They suppress their emotions. They're very uncomfortable with anyone else's emotions. So conflict is a big fear of them. They can be sort of people pleasing so they don't have to face some emotions in others.
We're talking to psychologist Marissa G. Franco about her new book, Platonic, How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Kind of surprised. I guess we don't have friends in Wisconsin. Do you have a story of friendship you want to share with us? Do you need some advice from our guest on maybe making a friendship or maintaining past friendships? Love to hear from you. If you have a question, a thought, an experience you would like to share about making or maybe losing friends along the way, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Marissa G. Franco about her new book. It's called Platonic, How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends. You can join in with your story of friendship, maybe a tough time in your life where you've had trouble making friends, maybe after moving or moving to a new job, say. What's worked for you? What doesn't? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Elizabeth is with us in Madison. Elizabeth, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm known for keeping in touch with my friends. They always talk about how great I am about doing that. I have friends from 30, 40, 45 years back that I've kept in touch with. And I think that friendship, it does take work or effort to be able to keep in touch with people and, you know, keep up with their addresses or emails or new phone numbers. But it's really worth it. And I just think that was the important point I wanted to make.
I love it, Elizabeth. I'll tell you, you're a better friend than I am and probably a better person, too. Marissa, I'm the opposite of Elizabeth. I'm famously abysmal at keeping in touch with people. And I'm one of those people who gets, you know, I feel guilty and then like, oh, it's too late. I can't, you know, I feel like an idiot if I reach out. How do we be more like Elizabeth than like me?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's lovely that you have positive intent. And Elizabeth, I'm glad that you are able to do all of those things because I'm sure you're making other people feel so, so loved. I think part of the ways we get better at it is we change our framework for friendship. I think a lot of us have this frame of friends. It's good vibes only. It's easy. It's not that. And so it's not on our list of priorities, right? Because of how we've just been socialized and conditioned to see it. But in fact, I think I argue that there's a difference between good company and a good friend. That good company is someone whose time you enjoy. They put you in a good mood, right? You like them as a person, but that is not a good friend. To be a good friend, it's a responsibility, an investment, a commitment in another person, right? It's, I'm going to be there to support you in your times of need. I'm going to try to make you feel safe when you're vulnerable. When you succeed, I'm going to celebrate you, right? I think our framework for friends needs to be more similar to our framework for romance, which is I need to put in time and effort. And there's times where this is going to be hard, but I also know that it's really worth it. And so it's really making friendship a priority amidst all of our other priorities.
Thanks again for that call, Elizabeth, at 800-642-1234. Paul joins us next in Northern Illinois. Paul, hi.
Hey, how's it going, Rob? I love your show. You know it.
Thanks.
I wanted to, I had to laugh when I was listening. I heard this, hi, my name's Paul. Will you be my friend? And actually, that's how my wife describes me. And I guess I'm trying to understand, is there a potential to have a combination of these friendships? In other words, I have friends that I consistently meet up with and we go through the deeper deeps. And then I have wonderful companions, like a girl that I met in an airplane that took me all around, you know, a Caribbean island because we just happened to talk on the plane. Wow. Together with my wife. I'm just curious, like, are there gray lines? You know,
Paul, I think I gotcha. We can have a variety of friends, maybe Marissa, with a variety of roles in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a great question. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of friendship, that it can occur on such a spectrum, right? Like now some people are even choosing friends for their life partners, but we also have these sort of friendly acquaintances. I also talk about in the book, this idea of low dose friends, right? There's some people that we like some parts of them, we don't like others. And you might think, oh, this person can't be my friend. But in fact, you could really enjoy their company at low doses. If you see them once a month, you're like, oh, I'm happy. That was nice. But if you see them more frequently, it's like, oh, no. And so that's the beauty of friendship. We can sort of turn the dial down or turn the dial up based off of the connection we have, the degree of compatibility that we feel. And so it can just give us so much versatility.
Paul, thanks a lot for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Talking to Marissa G. Franco. Her new book is called Platonic, How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Matt is with us in Wonder Lake, Illinois. Matt, hi.
Hi. I love WPR. Love the Ideas Network. I just wanted to comment really quick. You know, I was a millennial in Chicago, went to art school, had a number of bands, a couple of my bands toured the world, and we had incredible experiences together. However, like after the pandemic, we all seemed to go our separate ways, and it's been, really, really tough reestablishing some sort of connection with my former bandmates and the people that I was so close to making art with. And I just wanted to speak on that. And, you know, I really try to make an effort, and, you know, when those efforts aren't reciprocated, it can be kind of hurtful. So I just wanted to speak on that and just say, you know, continue to reach out to your good friends, and hopefully one day you'll be able to hang out with them in the same capacity again. So thank you.
Matt, thanks a lot for that call. Marissa, I'm guessing Matt is very much not alone in that, you know, pandemic disruption of the life with friends. Do you have some advice for him and other people in that situation trying to rebuild?
Yeah, well, Matt, I really love your investment in your previous friendships. I think more generally, we saw in the pandemic a sort of split in how friendship was affected, right? For those people that your friendship is a companionate friendship, it's contingent on you doing activities together, it was a real blow. We couldn't do activities together. But for those people whose friendship was founded on sharing the deep, vulnerable, profound stuff, right? Reaching out when we're struggling and getting support, those friendships were a little bit more durable because we all needed support. So, hey, we were able to access them. It looks like this caller is sort of struggling because he's still invested in these friendships and his friends aren't. I think just some follow-up questions I have to ask is that, you know, we tend to devalue our friendships more if we don't see them in person. So have you tried to see these friends in person so they can sort of recognize your chemistry and your dynamic and how much they value you, right? That when we're apart from people, it's hard for us to viscerally feel that connection in the same way than when we're in person. I think it's also helpful to think about friendship as flexible, not fragile. What I mean by that is friendships ebb and flow, right? And if you're in an ebb and you assume it's fragile, then you're going to assume it's over and you're not going to reach out anymore. But it might be that this is going to flow again at another time when, you know, your friends are in a good place. So you can sort of treat it that way. That being said, I hear that it hurts when the relationships don't feel so reciprocal and you're the only one reaching out. And I also wanted to say, it'll be important to find relationships that are reciprocal, right? To find those people that are ready and available. And we tend to find those in transitioners. That's people who just moved to a city, who are going through a divorce or breakup, who just retired. They tend to be particularly open to friendship. So I think that's a good place to start.
Thanks for that call. Good luck. Hope that helps. Time for one more caller. Kimberly is with us in Arena. Kimberly, hi.
Hi. So I tend to be the extroverted friend. I'm the one that's always taking my crew of introverted friends along with me because I'm making all of the decisions or, hey, let's all go out here tonight. I've just been kind of experiencing a lot of decision fatigue from that lately, and so then I end up staying home because I don't want to go out and make decisions or make everybody go someplace, so then everybody else ends up staying home.
Oh, no.
And I just keep going through the same cycles because then I'll be tired, we won't do anything, and then go right back to it, and we just can't seem to find a balance. I don't know.
Interesting. Kimberly, thanks for the call. Marissa, briefly, do you have advice for Kimberly to have some of those introverts get on board and organize it and make some of the decisions?
Yeah, Kimberly, I think maybe trying to automate your hangouts, like every other Wednesday we're going to go to this restaurant or every other Wednesday we're going to choose to go to someone's house can be a really great way to do it. The other thing I wonder is if you've made your expectations, if you have asserted them in an upfront way, right? Or if you're just sort of upset about this and hoping someone will kind of get the hint. And I think just saying something as simple as like, hey, y'all, really want to see y'all. Being the coordinator can sometimes be hard on me. Would we be open to sort of rotating who sets up our plans and see what they say?
Good luck, Kimberly. In just our last minute or so, Marissa, rescuing the word love. I think we just think of romantic love in our society now. Make the case for thinking of love as something we have for our friends.
So there's this Italian philosopher who says platonic love is a love so beautiful that it transcends the physical. And so I think we can see that each love is beautiful. Romantic love is beautiful, but platonic love is beautiful too. And it, in its non-sexual nature, right, it provides us with its own offerings in its fluidity. It provides us with its own offerings and its versatility, right? In the fact that our friends can be an entire community, whereas for most of us, our spouse is limited to one person. It provides us with unique offerings, which make it so that friendships cannot be replaced by any other type of relationship.
Marissa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Marissa G. Franco, psychologist with the University of Maryland. She's with us today to talk about her new book. It's called Platonic: How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends. Hey, if you want to shout out one of your friends, we would love to hear from you. You can email ideas@WPR.org or head over and post on the Ideas Network Facebook page with a story of a friendship that's been important in your own life.